Welcome to Men Are Nuts, a podcast about mental health, emotional health, psychological health, physical health, awareness in men, women and society. First, it started with MAN, the acronym for Men Are Nuts. And we have a very special guest on the show for you today. He's been on before, even though that episode hasn't gone live yet. I'm still waiting for someone's bio. But let's get you on and introduce yourself. How are you?
Yes, sir. My name is Nicholas Evans, and I'm a professional basketball player for the last about 9 years all over the world. And I'm talking to you today from Ube, Yamaguchi Prefect, Japan.
And what's your basketball? What's the basketball team you play for?
We're the Yamaguchi. My pronunciation's still getting used to over here. We're part of the Yamaguchi Patriots in the B3 League in Japan.
Fantastic. For those of you who are really into basketball and we know about the league, he's a professional basketball star in Japan. And we spoke before on the podcast about numerous things. And you just spoke about, you just mentioned about your internet. What's happening with internet in Japan?
I was expecting it to be technologically just amazing over here, but it's got that little orange light blinking on it. It's a little tiny box the size of a coffee mug. Right. I've been asking for a new one for about a month now. My children live in Canada, and I had made that like a big point to have the best Wi-Fi possible. My contract even take a little less salary for the best Wi-Fi, and they assured me that it was coming. But it's been orange now for the past month.
Right. So that you said, we always have these. Not presumptions, assumptions, whatever it may be, based on what we've been told, that certain places will have the most technologically advanced. And I'm not saying it doesn't. I mean, I know Japan has, I think Japan was one of the places that has the fastest, was it a bullet train or something like that? I can't remember if it was Japan.
Yes, sir. I saw that the other day.
Yeah, so they have that, but then you're waiting a month for your Wi-Fi.
Yes, sir. But, Coach told me I gotta view life as a series of challenges, and other people have way worse challenges than me, so that should help me get through my little challenges of the day.
But, like you say, at the end of the day, we can have a laugh about it and kind of have sometimes we take these things for granted and we don't realize, but in that moment, sometimes we have to take a step back, don't we? And have to look and think, oh, well, if that's all that matters is Wi-Fi, look what's happening around the world. So, sometimes that my mum always says to me, you take the rough with the smooth. So,
I like that.
So how's your, since we spoke last time, how have you been? And kind of tell the listeners how you've been and what's been happening?
So we played our first two preseason games in a city little north of Tokyo, I believe. We won our first one. I played really well. And then the second game, we lost, and I struggled. And so it was kind of an interesting weekend, great bus ride up, kind of more of a quieter bus ride back, 8-hour bus ride. The flow of basketball is a really flowy game. It's a game of runs. You can score 10 points in two seconds almost, and then you can not score for 2 minutes straight. So the second game, the flow wasn't there for me. A little bit harder getting into the game as far as just finding my rhythm. And so it was a little bit more of a struggle, and Coach really identified some of my weaknesses compared to the reasons he brought me in based on my game film. And we kind of went back and we looked at my old game film. And so he's putting me in a better position that more fits my style, hopefully to increase my performances that's needed with only two imports on this team.
Okay, so you're one of So in the league, then is there sort of like a requirement of having a certain amount of imports in the team, or is it, what's the? Because what I'm trying to work out is, I remember football, soccer years ago in England, there's this thing where you could only bring in a certain amount of, like they call them foreigners or imports or what now.
Yes, sir.
Foreigners in quotation marks, and then you could only bring a certain amount of them for the year or for the season or whatever. Is it the same thing? There's a quota.
Yes, sir. So in Japan, B3, you can have up to 3 imports, but only 2 on the floor. Some teams only have 1 import. Some teams have 3 imports. My team, there's only 2 of us. We're able to play, the whole game. I played in Taiwan last year. There was 2 imports, but only 1 import on the floor for the second and the fourth. But the first and the third both could play. In the Middle East, it's mostly 1 import. So I played in Saudi Arabia, only 1 import. In Bahrain, only 1 import. But when I played in Europe, there's 4 or 5 imports. It really affects the game because, they bring you over, especially for basketball. As the Americans, you carry a lot of the load. You usually have the biggest chunk of the pie for the salary. So the responsibility lies on you. And when you have 5 or 6 imports, sometimes like you do in Europe, there's too many cooks in the kitchen, and it gets difficult to really establish a pecking order when everybody's hungry. Sometimes in these Asian, Middle Eastern markets that are only 1 or 2 imports, it allows you to really kind of show what you can do without having an internal competition within the team. But it also exposes, when you have a bad game, sometimes when you're in Europe and there's 4 imports, you can kind of delegate, in a bad game, someone else picks up the slack, and then your mistakes kind of get brushed underneath the rug because, your buddy had a good game. But here, the good comes with the bad. So, you don't really have a lot of internal competition, but, when you lose, there's only really one hand to raise, and it's your own.
Yeah, it's almost like what you were saying there. I thought you were going to say it, but I would say it because it happens a lot in team sports, where if you have a bad game, you almost you can hide, in a sense. They call it hiding. You can hide within. even though you might feel that you're having a bad game and you try your best, but there's a point in it where you they call it hiding. The other imports or the other players in the team, like you say, they take the slack for you, and then you're kind of you're not as much in the limelight then. So like you say, it's again goes back to that thing, rough with the smooth. We take the rough with the smooth. You're in a league where, again, I thought you would have said egos. Where you're in Europe and there's so many people and they're all wanting to kind of take center stage or be part of the limelight, but now you're in a league where you're actually the limelight, and you, in a sense, you can't hide.
No, the truth is going to come to the top, and the responsibility is on you. So you're getting enough rope to hang yourself or to make a beautiful a tire swing to jump across and do a backflip on and look beautiful. So you're given enough leash to kind of roam around your yard and find your favorite spots to play at like a dog, or you're given enough leash to where you're gonna wrap yourself around a tree and that's the end of you. So there's definitely enough rope here to either accelerate or decelerate really fast.
So what's this didn't sound thingy, but what's basketball like there? I don't mean I know basketball is played with a round ball and it's on the court and it's the same thing, but I mean, what's it like there? Is it big crowds? Are you in the limelight? Whilst being there, are you being noticed? Are the players tall? Is the league growing?
Yes, sir. So B1, which is top level Japan, those games are packed. Those games are blue check athletes, like, you know, they have major high budgets, ex-NBA guys, and some guys that aren't ex-NBA but work themselves up through the system that I am in now. I am in B3, as you know, logic would say there's also a B2. So I'm in a new team, a brand new team in B3, so a new entry team in the bottom division. So what this is allowing me to do is kind of enter in and fight my way up through the ranks without having NBA on my resume, because there is ways to make it to top division, and those are limelight, those are major crowds you're meeting, you know, you're getting endorsement deals, you are really, you're pushing some weight. But where I'm at, we are an extremely young team. One of the youngest teams I've ever been on. We are fast. We are energetic. We have energy for days. We're a little frantic at times, but I've always been one to apply the theories. I'd rather pull somebody back than have to push them forward. You know, so we are a team that's hungry to get out. These guys are young. Only two of them have played like B2 and probably came down to like B3 for financial reasons. You know, like they were able to, you know, maybe make more here at the B3 level than they, a bigger role. So like they left their, you know, so the locals I'm talking about, the local Japanese player left their roles on a B2 team or even a B1 team where their roles are not, and they're barely going off the bench, and came down to B3 to where now they're a starter and to have a chance to have more minutes, kind of work through their mistakes. So compared to some of the other leagues I've been in, like I've played in Serbia for a while, those are big, strong dudes, 60-point games, really low-scoring games, but half-court basketball, kind of, you know, who can push each other harder, not a lot of shooting, like mostly like inside, like, you know, like 90s type basketball in the NBA, where this kind of feels a little bit of a hybrid. This is a fast pace, a lot of threes, more of a mainstream basketball style, like from the outside in. So the limelight is coming definitely here in my local city. Like, people know us. We were on the news last night. Our posters around town. I met the mayor today. But on a large scale Japanese market, we're just starting to break into it. We're definitely not. But this is, like I said, this is a year one team. So I'm part of this first chapter. So where we go from here will be directly correlated to me for the rest of this team's history, good or bad.
All rest on your shoulders then.
Yes, sir. My own success to move up through the ranks and also to help this team navigate themselves, through the different B leagues.
Yeah, I know. You know, we kind of talk about subjects of basketball. How would you compare? You've been in so many different countries. You played basketball in those countries, and let's not talk about the living part of it, but let's talk about just the playing basketball and you've obviously been playing basketball for a long time. What's the difference between the leagues in terms of stature or the way they play? I mean, do you have one favorite or another?
Yeah, so I'm really not a big fan of the European style of basketball. Like no one has ever said we should play more European style of basketball at the Olympics, because America's always dominating. So some of the European coaches feel like they invented the game, and it's connect the dots with them. Like, hey, we're going to draw an elephant, and here's all the dots. The ball always must go there. Like, these coaches want to control every single pass. Like, well, what if they're overplaying and that pass is taken away? Well, we're going to force it in there. Like, and they just act like they invented the game. So, like, the European style of basketball, like, I really struggled with, because I like the, hey, we're going to draw an elephant and we're going to take 2 weeks of freestyle drawing together, and now we're all going to sit down and try to freestyle draw this elephant. And sometimes it looks horrible, but once it starts clicking, Oh, those are your best works of art. So, I wasn't in the high level Europe. I wasn't in EuroLeague where it was a high level connect the dots. I was fighting through the mid. I wouldn't say a low level Europe. I was fighting through the mid ranks of Europe, and so a lot of these coaches, just wanted to, I tied my own shoe. I tied that. See that knot? I did that. But there's two different ways you can score. You
Yeah, I
can.
breathed.
It's like,
It was me that was breathing.
yeah. So it's. Say that again.
See, I was saying that it was me that was breathing. It was my breath that did that.
Yeah, for sure. And there's two different ways to score the basketball. You can draw up plays that are highly important, like coming out of timeouts or in the fourth quarter when you're up only three possessions or down three possessions, and you have to run sets, like plays that are rules. The ball must go, we are looking for something very specific. But in the flow of the game, in the second and the third quarter, when pace and freedom, you gotta trust your player's individual skill set. So we can run a million plays to get this same shot that I could have just walked up and took myself just based on my skill set. So we could run this play that's gonna take 20 seconds and on a 24-second shot clock. Or you could just give me the ball 3 seconds into the shot clock, and you can just let my skill, my ability to dance with the ball, show itself off. Now, being able to balance that, in the fourth quarter, you kind of got to pull your players back. Hey, like there's 24-second shot clock. We're up three, 2 minutes left. We don't need quick shots. We need to play more of a strategic connect the dot basketball. So yeah. So back to your original question. I kind of like, I found I really like the Middle Eastern and Asian markets because they don't feel like they invented the game, and they're willing to kind of let the local let the imports kind of feel out the game. And then I got blessed with the coach I have. He played for a long time, so he understands the flow, the perpetual motion of basketball mixed with the play. So for me, I really enjoyed Argentina, but for me, I really enjoyed it, like Canada, like G League type style of basketball, and Asia compared to the European markets I've played in, just based off of how they view the theology of the game.
And in terms of you moving around and living in those countries, and if you can, what was that like to live in so many different countries and be able to moving around? And was there any times where, so like during your basketball career, because we can talk about the other parts of your life before, but during your basketball career, was there any times where was any points where you felt like giving up, or you don't want this, or you went to a country and it made you feel like, you know what, I want to get out of here, or where it tested you mentally?
Yeah, so I broke my foot twice in one season playing in the National Basketball League of Canada, really good Canadian league, all ice hockey rink arenas, like locals, like smaller cities, like 10,000 people cities. So it's really nice. I broke my foot twice in one season, and I went back to school, and I had dreams of becoming a doctor, taking the MCAT, at least challenging the MCAT, the medical examination test, even get into medical school. So I started studying for that, and I really fell in love with it. But then, I got the itch back. So that the game was taken away from me when I broke my foot, and like obviously, like I didn't have like an insurance clause, or the team didn't like, pay for my contract the entire time. Like, I got released, based on injury. So the game kind of got taken away from me at that point. I considered moving on to school, and I took chemistry and biology and statistics, and then Switzerland offered me a contract, and I had a wife and a son at that point. I had a wife at that point. I still have a son. He's doing great. So I went over to Switzerland because the financial benefits were a lot better. And then the second time I really thought about giving up is when I was trying to make the money I thought I was worth, you know, I was married, I had children, I wasn't, you know, I was making better than the normal 9 to 5 in America, but not much more. And I thought of giving it up just based off my responsibilities. So that was one of them. And sometimes, like, the last one I went with, my ex-wife and 3 children, right before COVID hit in January. We left in December. We left out Christmas Day out of Albania through Kosovo. And it was just hard with the 3 children and the housing and the medical system and kids getting sick and not speaking the language. And it was a beautiful, beautiful time looking back, but sometimes in the moments it was really stressful. And so, like, you know, a few times basketball has tested me from a family perspective.
Yeah. And how was you able to overcome that? What, you know, based on decisions or the times where, like you say, you broke your leg, and was it a love for the basketball, or was it 2 things, love for basketball and your determination? What was it about you that made you make a decision to say, you know what, maybe this is the route for me and I need to stick with it?
Yeah, so this was like the only thing I've ever known. Like, since I was about 15 years old, basketball has been the only thing I've ever done. It's what paid for my university. It's provided, you know, housing for my family, car, you know, food, gas. I didn't know if I had what it took to become a doctor. And so my passion for the game, my love for the game, you know, I watch ESPN over here. I watch old basketball games. There's a great picture of me and my son in Romania, in Transylvania, when he was 3 weeks old. And we're watching 1994, you know, NBA finals on, you know, and he's 3 weeks old. And, you know, so I love the game. I love what it can do for youth. It's highly important in society, much as Gladiators was for Rome. Basketball and the NFL in America are necessary for society just to take a break from itself sometimes. So I view sports as something necessary. Now, at the level I'm doing it, like, I'm a bit conceited and saying, like, I'm relevant. But I played at a high level, and I've made high salary doing this. And I know I've impacted kids, you know. So, yeah, my love and just... I can't be away from the game too long without being really, really hungry for it.
Yeah. So I was able to overcome that, because there's a strong passion there for you to even just achieve and get what you want from the game, whether it's, like you say, whether it's monetary or just the love of the game, because, like you say, it's the only thing that you've really known to do. And why not just keep on doing it until, you know, until it's time to stop?
And I'm addicted to traveling. I'll tell you that much. I've never got on an airplane without basketball contract. So, yeah, I love seeing this beautiful world of ours. It's crazy the places basketball has taken me. I always wonder sometimes, is this my last flight?
So, just for listeners out there, tell them, what countries have you played in? Tell them again, what the countries have you played in terms of basketball?
I got the list here.
His list is very long, so he said he's got a list there. It's probably an A4 page, maybe 2.
It's been 33 countries. Wow. So I played in Canada, Ecuador. I spent a lot of time in kind of the outer reaches of Ecuador, the Amazon in Ecuador. That was a beautiful place. Played in the Dominican Republic. I played in Colombia, right there on the Venezuelan border. I did a stopover in Brazil. I played in Argentina. Played some preseason games in Uruguay. I stopped in Denmark for 3 days on my way to Germany when I was in university. Stopped in Germany. couple times on layovers, so I'm counting that. Played in Switzerland, did a preseason game in Italy and Milano. Played in Romania, in Transylvania province. Played a preseason games in Slovakia. Transited through Hungary. Played in Albania, played in Montenegro, played in Northern Macedonia, played in Kosovo, played in Bulgaria, did the World University Games in 2008 in Turkey. I played in Saudi Arabia in Medina, where the Prophet Muhammad was born. I did transit through Bahrain, preseason game there. I played in Thailand, Bangkok. I spent about a year of my life longer in China. I've done about seven different tours in China, the shortest one being a month, and I've gone seven times to China. I'm now here in Japan. I played in Taiwan for 3 months. I played in Tunisia and Northern Africa. I played in an American league in America, in the USA. Played in Armenia, to the right of Turkey, Yerevan, Armenia. And I also transited through, I think, where you're at, Qatar, on the way to Turkey.
Has there ever been a country where you felt, again, going back to you painting a picture of you being someone who's been strong enough to go to those countries, and, you know, obviously we're always aware of things around us and you know, and dangers and things like that. Was there anything that you came across that, again, sort of like tested that, your ability to stay there or not want to stay there, or was in time in any of those countries, aside from the, you know, whether it's monetary or anything, was there anything external that kind of you thought, oh no, this is a bit of a dangerous place, I don't really want to be here, or was there anything that happened?
What I was told about Colombia was pretty dangerous. The city I was at was called Cucuta. It's on the Venezuelan border. So the Venezuelan dollar is like 30,000 or more to one. One U.S. dollar is like 30,000 theirs. And in Colombia, it was one U.S. dollar was like 3,000. And the Cucuta city is literally on the border itself. And so there's a lot of illegal crossings. And just the amount of kidnapping that was taking place, even the U.S. Department's website was like, please don't go here without personal security. I didn't notice anything because I always prided myself on being able to relate to the population that I go to. And so I kind of showed a brave face and was willing to like walk around a little bit more than my teammates. But we also had personal security. We had cars with bulletproof glass. We had people following us around in the mall about three steps behind us to the left with a backpack on with God knows what was in it. So Colombia felt a little bit, but when we went to like Cali, Colombia, but there was a huge protest. Like they shut the league down for a week because of the protest. They cut health insurance and they were breaking glass. They surrounded our hotel. We were in the downtown part of Cali, Colombia. They weren't, you know, threatening us by no means. It was the government doing it. So like they weren't threatening like us as the Americans or us as the basketball league. It was just the population. Even my teammates, the local Colombians, were upset with what the government was doing. It was on the news. I'm a big fan of Al Jazeera News. I love watching them. It was on Al Jazeera News. So yeah, Colombia felt pretty real. In just the volatility of the situation, not necessarily to me. Yeah. But it felt, the country itself felt pretty real. And then in Albania, to the right of Italy, across the, I think it's the Adriatic right there, part of the Mediterranean, everybody in that country wanted out. I'm talking every single person, from the team president to the dog on the street. I love their dogs. I actually feed them food all the time on the way to practice. I have a herd of them following me. But there's people asking me for my passport so they can make copies. Huge Syrian refugees. They would come up through like Northern Africa, like, you know, they come around the Horn of like from Egypt, and then they get on the Mediterranean. Instead of making it into Italy or some of those other countries, they would sneak into Albania. It was a Muslim country right there just to the south of Bosnia. And it felt It felt like everybody wanted out. I felt safe, like people were nice, but it felt like Edgar Allan Poe could have written some stuff there, and it also felt like just everybody wanted out. Yeah, and I took my wife and kids there, so it was a kind of a tough environment to, you know, be happy when you know that the homeless person on the street outside is begging you every day, and you know if you have any type of empathy, you know, it's tough to view.
So like I say, you've been around the world, seen many places. Is there any place that, I mean, now you kind of settle yourself in Japan and things like that. Was there any place that you would return to, and was there any place that's probably not on your bucket list and you haven't been there, but you would like to try or would have liked to have tried in terms of basketball?
Yeah, so the place I would go back to is Colombia in a heartbeat. I really, really, really enjoyed my time, even with everything I just said. I really enjoyed my time in Colombia. I almost chose there instead of coming to Japan. I really enjoyed the basketball there. It was really strong. Grown men playing the game. So I really enjoyed like Ecuador and Colombia and Argentina. I enjoy South America a lot. I enjoy the food. I enjoy the culture. You know, I enjoy the music. You know, the way like there's families outside at 9 o'clock. You know, listening to people like with the big sombrero hats and the not just the Spanish rap music, but like just the nice like Coco type music from the Disney movie type thing. Like, you know, like more serenading type music. I really enjoyed that. A place I haven't got to go. I wish India would get a basketball league, because there's almost a basketball league in every country in the world. You could almost name any country in the world and there is a basketball league there. But in India is the only country that really comes to the top of my head that doesn't have a basketball league. I've always wanted to see India, like for the monsoons and just the Buddhist temples and the Dalai Lama. So that's one place I'd like to get to. Eventually, maybe I'll help found the first basketball league in India one of these days.
Well, that sounds like a plan and a long term, and that'd be interesting, long term ambition if you keep that in your mind.
Yeah, my coach here told me to write down a list of 300 things I wanted to do before I die. So I now have number 67. I'm struggling to get past 100 of 300 things I want to do before I die. So I just found the next one. Start the basketball league in India.
Fantastic. So let's talk about your, you know, we mentioned it on the last podcast. It was only kind of, you know, I thought there was probably more to it and more that you could speak about. I remember you saying that you were alone, was you? You wasn't, there was no brother and sister, or you were on your own and you were brought up in, you weren't a city boy.
No, I was raised among the Amish. We weren't Amish. Both my parents retired from the military. My dad worked for the state of Illinois, like doing like food stamps and like helping people find jobs and stuff. People that were, you know, needing, you know, financial assistance and trying to get back on their feet. So my dad worked for like public assistance. But we grew up in the country. I had a brother and a sister, half brother and sister, you know, that I really don't have contact with today. Yeah, so I grew up in the backwoods of southern Illinois, in Amish country with beagles and rabbit hunting and four-wheelers and bonfires. And yeah, I was homeschooled until the age of like 15. And then my parents got divorced and I moved to public school. And the coach saw me and about had a heart attack and said, "We're making this kid play basketball."
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was like 6'9", my sophomore year. Yeah.
What age is that?
Say again, sir.
What age? You say sophomore. Yeah, for listening out there, what age is that?
Right around 15 years old.
6'9".
15, 16. Yeah, about 6'8", 6'9", for sure. I only grew like another 2 inches. I'm 6'11 now, so like, whoa. Yeah, I only grew like another 2 inches.
You know what? You know, I don't know what it is. Because at the moment they said that the Dutch are meant to be the tallest people in the tallest nation. But I remember when I went to America, and I remember going when I was in New Jersey and was in the cafeteria because we were doing the football and stuff like that. And then some guys came in who were doing basketball, loads of them. They were doing another camp and stuff like that. And it was young, you know, like you say, about 14, 15, and they were all massive. And I thought to myself, well, you can't say, you know, it's not something that you can say is category every single person, but how does a place have so many tall people? And it's an interesting thing to kind of look at, because you, like you say, you were 15, and I'm going to presume that wasn't out of the norm.
Yeah, so like my mom was 6 foot, dad was 6'6". It's funny you say the Dutch, the Amish were all Dutch, they spoke Dutch. So like there was definitely a lot of taller athletes around me, especially in Southern Indiana, Southern Illinois, produced a lot of, you know, farm boys that were just kind of taller farm boys. I kind of came from, you know, my mom and dad were tall, so like, you know, we were German and Irish. My mom's side immigrated to America in like 1912, 100% German and 100% Irish, met in New York City. So I maybe there's Dutch in there somewhere, but as far as I know, and my dad's side of the family has been in Illinois since the beginning of time. So, I'm not exactly sure where it comes from, but there's definitely some genetics in there somewhere.
It's just, I suppose, in a way that we have certain countries where the nation is small. It's just interesting to wonder how, where that comes from, and maybe that's something, like say, you can look into genetics. I did read the other day that I don't know if it's in Europe or around the world, but I know Dutch is supposed to be one of the tallest nations in the world.
Selective breeding, you know, you only got so many choices, and if you're going to stay in a little tiny nation of Dutch people and everybody's tall, well, the odds that, you know, your offspring out.
That's the point, because obviously, like you say, it's down to genetics, and if you're surrounded by it, it's just interesting to find out. Sometimes I thought, is it the food, and, you know, I was like, what the hell? You know, these guys are like, you know, what is it? So, for you then, did you ever want to play? What did... You said you're from your dad. You say your dad was in the military, and so what?
Yeah, he was in the Navy.
What did you want to be when you grew up? What was it that you wanted to be when you grew up?
I grew up in Illinois, and so like I always wanted to be like I wanted to be president for the longest time. Abraham Lincoln was like my number one hero of all time. Like the land of Lincoln, that's the motto of Illinois. He's buried. There's the first town called Lincoln. You know, is in Illinois. You know, Illinois is rich in Lincoln history. So, like, I always wanted to be president or, like, an ambassador or a preacher, a lawyer, so, something along those lines. But then, you know, kind of life hit. You know, parents got divorced, brother and sister moved away, and it was just me. And then basketball became, like, a very quick way to kind of, you know, go to university and kind of stretch my wings through the... You know, kind of a quicksilver hit.
Why did you want to be the president or somebody in a certain position? What was that position? What do you think that position would have? Yeah, you know, those sort of positions would have offered you.
So I grew up like in the church, like kind of right wing, not quite Mennonite or Amish, but definitely right-wing Christian. I read the Old Testament a lot and trying to understand, like I really liked the prophets, Isaiah, and like the prophets trying to tell you know, the kings of Israel, how to operate. You know, I looked at the Quran quite a bit. The race issue in America, especially in Southern Illinois, which is, you know, which was fought with the Union like way before my time, but definitely has strong roots of racism. And I was, you know, definitely would have been on the right side of history no matter when I was born, you know, when it came to that. So just, you know, hearing about heaven and hell and the race issue and the religious issue, like Dad was kind of an atheist, not really, kind of agnostic more than an atheist. Mom was like believed it to its core. And so like just the appeal of preacher, lawyer, president, and the ethical battle that comes with those roles that you kind of got to navigate through always kind of, you know, excited me to be able to speak freely, which is dangerous. You got to trust what's in your soul to just kind of get up front of a mic and start speaking. You got to trust what's in you. Those jobs always excited my soul.
So do you think that part of them was almost like wanting to, like, almost like help others, like a sort of a sense of justice and in the world, and it was your opportunity to give that, your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So like, yeah, I think I have a decent ethical compass, and so to be able to speak on those things, to enact some of the morals that I grew up with, but also the freedom to allow others to express theirs. And the way Lincoln was able to heal the nation, the way Isaiah was able to, you know, advise the people in Israel, the way the prophet Muhammad, you know, was able to impact his tribes and to carry it forth even till today, you know, there was just something, you know, that echoed into the future, that allowed your words to carry way beyond your death. And you know, my morality is always something that's on my mind. The fact that I'm going to die, I guess, like my mortalism, I think it's called morality, but that's moral. But my ability, knowing that I'm going to die, kind of makes me want to make some type of impact beyond what I've made even thus far.
Yeah, an impact on the world. And it's funny how you say you want to make an impact, and you spoke about, you know, you spoke about the Quran and the Bible, and it's interesting how you, and you know, people say coincidence and all this sort of stuff. You're just connecting the dots and you're putting two and two together to make 15. But is it funny how you read those and you've ended up in so many different countries, whether it be Christian?
Yes.
Ended up, and it's almost like you becoming, I'm not gonna sit here and be kind of all flower. I'm saying it's just interesting how we don't observe, we don't notice this. It's maybe not until someone tells us, or until we sit down one day and think, oh my gosh, I did this then, but look what's happened to me. Because I remember me being at school, being, I liked, the two things I liked was sports, which was, and I liked football, and I liked art. And I've ended up, by hook or by crook, I've ended up being a designer, graphic designer, working in graphic design, working for myself, and then I've also been working with sports and football. And the two things that I liked were the two things at a young age, is the two things I've ended up being, that's been part, I say, major parts of my life. So it's funny how we have those things. Some people associate, some people say traumas. We have traumas at a younger age, and it has an impact at the older age group. So why can't it be the reverse for the same thing when it's something positive? Where, like you say, you're looking at the Quran, looking at all these, you know, the Bible and all these sort of things, and you've ended up in countries where you can almost like spread the word without spreading the word, because you're spreading it through basketball or whatever it may be. I don't know if I, you know, what you think of that.
Yes, sir. So just like to piggyback a little bit what you're saying about art, I even did, to stay eligible in college, I had to take a art and sports class where I studied a 20-page research paper on sports and art, which is really interesting. And I'm talking to a doctor now. We've become really good friends and, you know, kind of dating from a long distance. You know, we're trying it. But she's definitely into art. We went to the art gallery in Chicago. And the way she would speak about, like, the different artists, you know, it was just, it's a way to express, like, I never really liked art until I went to that art gallery about 2 months ago in Chicago. And it was amazing. Just the ability to stare at something and have it bring you and react so many different feelings. It was really cool to learn about that at a deeper level. And then just to feel like you have the ability to impact, through basketball, through, you know, what I wanted to take from the Bible, from the Quran, from the Torah, and, you know, having a belief in God and a faith in a lot of different other things. Like, you know, I have a belief in God, period. I have a faith in a lot of the other prophets or savior, you know, that can be shaken at certain points, but the ability to feel like, you know, on this planet, through a God, through one God, in my personal belief, you know, sometimes grounds me back to, it's just a basketball game and there's a kid watching me maybe going through something really, really hard, that I can make some type of small impact, on his day.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you say that as well, because like I just said, you're looking, you're almost a messenger with the basketball, because like you said, it could be just a game and we get angry and get upset, and sometimes there's elation, there's sadness, there's go through all different emotions. When it's all said and done, when it's all said and done, like you say, somebody could be watching you, and yes, you've got to. No one's going to say that you're going to play. No one's going to say that you're going to play basketball and you have a smiling face, and then when you lose, you've got a smiling face, because we all show emotion. But at the end of the day, we all have a role in this life, and part of that, one of those probably for some of us, a lot of that role is to how we impact on others. And like you said, I can hear that you want. I can definitely hear from the first time we spoke that you want to help others. Which is, I think that's something that's going to, you're doing it now for your basketball. I think you're going to do it later on as well. So let's, was there any time, because you mentioned it there kind of slightly, was there any time where your belief in God and life, was that ever tested? Was there any point where you said, you know, is there a God? What's happening? Has it ever been felt like it's tested you? Because what I was going to come back to is the time when your parents got divorced, and I'm wondering if that did that have an impact on you?
Yeah, so like I'm sure, you know, as a child, you know, they were going through it, you know, the age of like 10 onward, I'm sure it was an issue before then. You know, I began to notice it about that time. Like, it went deeper than religion for sure. But my mom's unwavering faith in God and my dad's agnostic kind of, really, two by two, they just walked right up to the boat, two by two. Like, you know, the sun went, like, some of the stuff in the Old Testament is crazy. And, like, some of the stuff in the, like, and so his belief in the natural world, like, he was a, but my mom's unwavering faith, you know, allowed you to be anchored to something that could get you through the hard times. It allowed you to grasp onto something that was real enough to sustain you. It's not just words, like it could actually sustain you. And then my dad's skepticism that I kind of remember a little bit, sticks out in my brain. You know, also provided like a little bit of the rational thought that still tempts me, you know, to this day, you know, with my faith in God, whether I truly believe it. So it's kind of a healthy mixture of the two. You know, I'm sure there was more to the divorce, you know, but that part of the divorce, like I definitely remember it, you know, with my interest in the Bible and Lincoln and the Quran, you know, and everything, you know, so I definitely remember those arguments more than any other ones, you know, kind of as a child.
Yeah.
And then what I'm going through now,
yeah,
you know, with my children being away from me and the divorce, you know, it's tested my belief a little bit, that we're not just on a floating rock in the middle of, you know, space and here for a blink, that maybe reality is just created in the brain, and once you shut off the brain, you know, the TV show's over. I want to say that I can remove part of my brain, I'm still me. I can remove part of my hand, I'm still, I think that there's something deep inside me, but the overall purpose for life, and now kind of losing my family in a certain sense. I have not lost my family. Like, I still like, you know, my children are my children, and they will be for life. But losing the family unit kind of makes me question the purpose for His design.
Yeah. And how's that? His question made you question, but. How's that? Because you saw yourself as you must have seen yourself as a family man. You probably saw yourself as someone I'm going to spend the rest of my life with this person.
Yes, sir.
Your faith from growing up and things like that, and this test in this moment, probably even in this moment now, even previously, and the splitting up. Have you been able to speak to God? Have you ever been able to speak to somebody about your what you've been going through and what the test, you know, are you going through it alone?
This podcast and talking to you, sir, has been bringing me back a little bit to what I need to feel. I used to feel like I was walking with something that wasn't just my own voice. I was actually walking with a different entity than myself, and I've definitely walked closer with that entity. It's not a conversation I'm having with myself, because I'm having a ton of conversations with myself lately. I feel like I'm going through it alone right now, and maybe that's a choice. Getting reconnected with those early days of what gave me passion is definitely something that I'll take away from this podcast, and hopefully the listeners will be able to relate back to what that original passion was in their spiritual or ethical or moral soul, and kind of hold on to that. I feel like it might help guide me through these decisions and days, you know, coming up for the following years of my life as I turn this new chapter.
Yeah, because I think I mentioned it before. I mean, because we have, as humans, but definitely as humans, that's a definite. But as a man, we have this thing where we have to, you know, like we spoke about this before, about having to provide and wanting to provide, wanting to be the husband that we want to be and be the father that we want to be or we can be. And then when that's almost like taken away from us, do you at any point, you know, obviously we're thinking it, you start to think about it, you start to overthink, you start thinking, you look, right, I'm in this situation now. So did you, I mean, there was going to be parts where you thought, you know what, maybe, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the right thing? Am I this? Back and forth, your head's back and forth, going in, and sometimes sleepless nights, or whatever it may be. Did you, at any point, did you, like you say, you're keeping it internally. Have you ever been, you know, you're keeping it internal. Have you been able to speak out to anybody and kind of, you know what, do you think I'm doing the right thing, or... You know, because sometimes we can go over the conversation in our head, and it's almost like we're talking to someone, but yeah, we still have to make the decision. But as men, we've got to try and kind of find a way to open up, and maybe this is why, like you said, the podcast is probably would help. And for the listeners out there who are listening to this, we do have these internal struggles or battles when we look at relationships with our relationships with God, relationships with our parents, relationships with our children, and even a wife or ex-wife. How's that been for you? Is this kind of like your your hardest battle internally?
Yeah, because the provider part, I don't have a work permit in Canada. The ex-wife and children are all Canadian passports. So I held many work permits in Canada, but just during basketball season. And once basketball is over, especially after COVID hit, I lost all work permits in Canada. So to provide for the children, I need to leave Canada in order to work, even if that's to go work at McDonald's in New York City, yeah, or as a basketball player in Japan, I had to leave Canada. But to leave Canada means I leave my children. And, you know, some of the stuff that's going on with custody issues is like I have custody of them in Canada, but I don't have a work permit in Canada, nor an easy route just to like, hey, you have a work permit. It's going to take 16 months or so. You know, I just really don't have the, you know, so how to provide for them and how to stay a part of their lives is an inward struggle. Like, why am I here for 9 months in Japan with my children in Canada? I made the mistake of writing on my Facebook page, I really just want to talk to my kids. That's all I wrote. I really want to talk to my kids. Like, usually my Facebook and Instagram is one big PR campaign for basketball. It's how I got a hold of every coach. Every country I named a while ago was just through Facebook. I've never been anywhere without Facebook and Instagram. But I made the mistake of writing that. Like, I wish I could talk to my kids. And a lady that's friends with my ex-wife, like, not friends with me, but I know, wrote this. I'm just going to say exactly how I feel about this, and you can delete me or block me if you want, but I'm going to say it. I understand you wanted to follow your basketball dream. It was for the sake of your children. Maybe you should have found a job here in Canada and been more involved in your family life. Do you think it's easy for your ex-wife to feel like a single parent? I know fair well that she wasn't, but the choices you made her feel alone. It was a very sad situation that you're going through, but I think you need to sit down and reflect on your life choices and the things that have changed since when you were first married. What could you have changed, and what could you have been more involved in and supportive? And I should have just kept B3 Japan basketball. We won last game. Yeah. I kept those posts and not post. not paid some stupid posts. Yeah. But so yeah.
And I would say, I was going to say to you there, sorry to put you there, I was going to say to you, things happen, people say this thing, and people, and maybe I shouldn't really say that, maybe I shouldn't be following in, because sometimes when we say these things, are they really what they mean? Should it be things happen for a reason, and blah, 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 should they happen for a reason, shouldn't, you know, we don't know, you know, we don't know, you know what I mean, we don't know what the universe has for us, or, so do the things happen really have that impact, and they are happening for that reason? But I would say to you in that instance, did you really make a mistake by putting it on? Because what you're doing there is you're crying for help. And I don't mean that in a sense of you're this man and you're sinking and all that sort of stuff. I'm saying by putting that out there, you're actually voicing that you maybe needed a sign of an assurance or I know what you mean by you made a mistake because then somebody's come back at you, but and it's then made you think even more. But really, that's kind of your cry for help, and I don't mean that in a derogatory sense, like you don't know what you're doing and you need help, because we all do, we all need some sort of man, woman, we can put our egos to one side, but the bottom line is we all need help, whether it's if we break our foot, so we need help from the doctor. We all need it. No matter, you can tell me that you can walk through this earth and no, and you can be the single, you know, like, I don't know, secret agent 101, and you've got no one. Do you know what I mean? Agent 101, and you can walk the earth. A bit like Kane from Kung Fu. You know, I don't know if you ever used to watch that, but David, years ago, there used to be a program called Kung Fu, and this guy called David Carradine used to walk the streets of, walk around the different towns, and he was doing things on his, literally walking the streets on his own. But at some point during the thing, if he got injured, a lady would tend to his cut or whatever it may be, grasshopper and all that sort of stuff. So he needed, we all need help. And that, I think that was your kind of cry for help.
Yes, sir. And especially with basketball, I went to three different high schools, so I transferred to the whole different side of the story. I went to three different colleges, 33 countries in the past, 8 years. There is no lifelong friend. There is not that one person. I have a ton of acquaintances, thousands of acquaintances. I can name thousands of names that, I've had some type of meal with or, some type of interaction with for 3 or 4 months at a time. And so, it was a cry for help. I'm sure my ex-wife can make the same cry. What she went through, I'm sure she could tell you a story that is correct in her eyes and correct in even my eyes of some of the stuff she had to go through. Just providing. Being a provider, feeling like I have worth in the family unit, even though the family unit's fractured. Understanding the situation I'm in, I'm a paycheck to paycheck. I'm slowly getting out of that to where I'm able to invest. Lawyer fees and stuff like that, not having a work permit in Canada. Some of my hands in this card game was forced. Like, I was forced to play a certain hand. I didn't have the option to work at, McDonald's in Canada. I can't legally work in Canada at all at the moment. Like, it'd take a while. So, yeah, it is an interesting complex of where I find myself at now. And finding solace, in my game. My son loves basketball. He knows what I do. The oldest one's 6, Benjamin. So he knows what I'm doing. And although my contact with him, has not been the same, like it would have been in Albania when he was with me daily, going to practice with me, going on the bus with me, he still knows what I do. And the best I can do is be smart with my finances and to represent him in a way that one day he'll be able to be proud of the decisions I made while I was here and how I treated people, and hopefully that'll echo into the future into some good consequences years down the road.
Yeah, definitely. And the main thing is that for all the will in the world, like you said, there's no way you could have done it and all that sort of stuff. But I always look at if you look at the positive side, is that you you're in touch with them. Yes, internet, Japan's internet or not, you're in touch with them.
Yes, sir.
It's better than writing a letter, and the letter takes, remember in the old days, the letters used to take, I don't know how many, how many weeks. It wasn't Amazon next day delivery. It was the weeks. The UPS or whatever, it was the letters used to take, message in a bottle type thing. So the positive thing is that you're keeping in touch. Your mental health is not impacted to the point where you're struggling. Yes, there's days when you're going to think, I'm missing my son and missing my kids and missing life with as a family man, but the bottom line is that at least the positives are that you're in touch. Some women will be cutting off all contact with the father. Some fathers don't even want to be part of their son's life or not part of their kid's life. Do not want to be part of their life. So at the end of the day, the positives are that you're able to keep in touch. and you know, and you're able to provide, you know, you're finding ways to provide, you like you're able to invest, and just, you know, you your mental health is intact.
Yeah, and this coach here, Coach John, I had no idea his name was John until you told me the other day. He has really been a person who has taken interest not only in my basketball, the ability to watch game film. Hey, Nick, you had a horrible game last game. Let's find a way to get the most out of you, and let's sit down and talk about it. But he also sits down and talks about, like, you know, a spilt milk analogy today was something that, hey, Nick, like, you looked a little down today. Let's talk about spilt milk and what it means to your life. And just having him as a coach, someone to take interest, you know, in my life as a person, you know, has allowed this transition in Japan to not only be, you know, interested from a basketball perspective, but as a human being, you know, I really got lucky with the coach that's in my life now.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what you need. You don't want to be somewhere where you're isolated. One place where you're isolated, you're not, you know, you don't get on, that's another thing, you're not getting on with the players, the coach doesn't want to know, he just wants to do, you're just interested in basketball and winning the thing, and there's no interest of mentorship and someone who you can go to and have a little chat around, and even, you know, that information isn't going to get out there, just somebody there for you, particularly living in a country where, you know, you say the internet's down and everything, all these things are happening, miles away from anywhere, in a sense, but you're here. So
yes, sir.
Yeah, so I think it's like you say, it's important. And I was going to ask you again, who's John?
John is somebody, he is my coach. He is somebody that has the ability to fire me and also has to help me through this mental complex. He also has to help me score 30 points. He has to take me to dinner and also have the ability to fire me at the same time. So John is in a really tough spot right now, but he's a great guy. Yeah, I'm so lucky to have him.
Yeah, I mean, this podcast, I mean, I was joking the other day, I was going to call this podcast, Where's John? Or Who's John? So I thought I'd bring that one up. So for you then, you've got this is happening back in your mind. Now you're playing basketball. You're ready, and you're fired up. What do you do apart from you know, I don't know if you eat, sleep, and let's say you eat, sleep, and drink basketball. But what's Nick like? What's his personality like? What sort of things apart from that, now getting into art? What's his personality like?
Yeah, so I started drawing quite a bit. I'm drawing a bunch of things that I'm horrible at. I've started to freehand draw. I've also got this Mario coloring book right in front of me. I'm buying plants now. I walk by and I see plants, and so I buy plants and I bring them into my apartment. I'm reading some books. I'm watching a lot of podcasts. I've really been into Joe Rogan's podcast and Shaq's podcast. I am figuring out what I want with life in these custody back and forth agreements, kind of thinking about my future and what I want it to look like. I'm struggling to figure out, like, who Nick is, and I'm just slowly starting to, okay, I like to draw, I like plants, I want basketball, I'm trying to eat better, you know, I used to be heavy, now I'm really light, you know, just trying to figure out what my second layer is, because I view myself number one as a dad, but that's gone in a literal day-to-day sense. I view myself as a player, but that's really only about 3 hours out of the day, and now what to fill the rest of my time with. And since I've been here, you know, I've been trying to do it with a lot of positive things that kind of help my life and just try to reach out to old relationships, like not in a romantic way, but in reaching out to past coaches, past teammates, and just trying to keep up with the people that I can one day. Hey, I've known you for 10 years now. Because of basketball, you lose that really quickly when you leave that country. So just trying to maintain relationships that I feel are important and yeah, buy as many orcas as I can at the moment.
So you cook, and there's a thing actually. I mean, I'm sure you know this, that I think it's the, I always forget, but I think it's the right side of the brain. But this, we have two sides of the brain. One side of the brain is the connection to the all the maths and science stuff, and then the other side is actually arts, which is combined with sports. So, you know, you're onto a good thing there, where you're doing the drawings and looking at plants and all those sort of things, and plus playing basketball. So you know you could be drawing a picture of a plant playing basketball. You know.
Hey, that's not a bad idea. I'll send you a random email a year from now with a lily playing basketball.
And going, and you know, life there at the moment, you know you haven't been there long. Have you been able to get out and about and having a walk and stuff, and are people wearing masks or not, or is just life, what's happening in life there in Japan?
So we're one of the only prefectures, like province or states, that is not in a complete kind of lockdown. We're in southern Japan. So the city is a little bit more relaxed. Masks are everywhere. Social distancing is still everywhere. But the city seems to be moving as usual. It's a big industrial city. We're right on the water. So I walk down to the water almost every night, where like the fishermen's are coming in, to these big tankers are coming in. There's a chemical plant right on the water that has like big tankers coming in and out. It's also a very artsy city here in Ube. There's a ton of statues and just kind of like paintings, like, you know, on the sides of buildings, but really well performed graffiti, like made by a talented artist. It's a slower pace to where we're at. It's definitely not Tokyo or Hiroshima or some of the big cities. I think I pronounced that wrong. Don't quote me. But some of the bigger cities, it's more of a slow feel here. And it's really enjoyable to be a part of this community.
Yeah. And just, you know, just an aside, just wondering, your height. Do you stand out? A couple of questions. Do you stand out? What size are your hands? And what size are your hands? And what size are your feet?
I got size 18 shoe. The mayor of Ube, the mayor of Ube asked me that today in front of all the media. So size 36 centimeter shoe. My hands are about a little bit more than average for someone my height. I'm like 6'11", so I'm able to grip a basketball with like even two fingers. I can grip a ball pretty well. And the height is interesting. You know, I hit my head a ton here. Like, you got the traditional dining rooms are low seats. The shower hits you, you know, navel area. You know, the kitchen sink is, you know, at my knees. You know, you definitely got to get my fish oils in, because my knees feel a little bit older than I do over here.
It's like those what is it? Those optical illusions that you say when you're in a room and there's optical illusions, and you move from one room to the other, and one thing's smaller than the other, and you're tall, and yeah, I can just picture that.
It's like Elf. It's like the beginning of Elf. Everybody is trying to survive at the North Pole.
I know what, Nick. I can hear that with all the things that are happening, and I can feel your pain of the you know, divorce and you know, not being able to see your kids and all that sort of stuff. But for all that, you're still smiling. You're playing your basketball, something that you love. You know your kids are going to be there. You're still a dad, and your love for art is starting to take off.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I really appreciate this platform you're providing people. I've been scrolling through your podcasts, listening to a few. I'm going to start listening to a ton more now. I really appreciate, you know, just the platform you've given me, given others, and to kind of voice what they're going through and be able to impact others and I'm definitely going to take some of the gems of what you said in your past interviews and your future ones from what you said yourself and your guests and apply them to my own daily life and watch, you know, what blossoms out of applying knowledge from other people.
Yeah, thanks for that. And, you know, just, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, I'm not here to hear and tell you what you should do or shouldn't do, but the main thing is that we're all in this together. You know, as much as it might seem like we're not, and everyone leads a separate life, and I don't really know, you know, like I said, I've only spoken to you twice, but we're all in this together. At the end of the day, what one person feels, another person might be feeling similar or been on the same journey, and we've got to think, you know, we can all, like I said, we can all sit there and say, we're not going to listen to you, I'm not going to listen to you, I'm not interested in that. But at the end of the day, we've got to, in order for our lives to feel more fulfilled, we've got to try and take a bit from everybody and help that help us through our own journey on this walk of life. So yeah, I'd like to say thank you for coming on the podcast.
Yes, sir. Hope you have a great day in where you're at, and I'm about to call it a night here in Japan and get at it tomorrow morning, and definitely think of some of your words, and have a great day impacting the world tomorrow.
And that was Men Are Nuts.